Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and from the law firm of Primer, Piper, Eggleston, and Kramer, providing comprehensive legal counsel to New Hampshire businesses and their owners for more than 30 years. For more information or to speak to an attorney, visit primer.com. And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own-farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. More than one in five newspapers have shut down in the past decade and a half, including last month, the Suncook Valley Sun here in New Hampshire. For more than 30 years, the Sun covered community news in five towns east of Concord. Its closure means the Suncook Valley joins a growing number of regions around the country that researchers call news deserts, with no locally based journalists keeping an eye on events from high school sports to town budgets. But amid the steady slide of this industry, new models are emerging, and some are thriving. And so today in The Exchange, we look at the status of local newspapers and new research on why it matters. Let's hear from you, too. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Here's the question for you, Exchange listeners. Do you read a local paper, either in physical form or online? Why or why not? Let us know. Again, our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have four guests joining us from Hanover. Maggie Cassidy, editor of the Valley News, a daily newspaper and website serving the Upper Valley of New Hampshire and Vermont. Maggie, really nice to have you. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also with us in studio, Nancy West, publisher of InDepthNH.org, a nonprofit watchdog news website published by the New Hampshire Center for Public Interest Journalism. Nancy, nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Also with us, Mark Garang, publisher of the Conway Daily Sun, the Laconia Daily Sun, and the Berlin Daily Sun, co-founder of the Laconia Daily Sun. And Mark, nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Nice to be here.
Also with us, Charlie Jordan, editor of the Colebrook Chronicle, a free weekly serving the Upper Connecticut River Valley, which also produces a weekly video newscast. And Charlie, great to see you. And as always, thank you for making the trip. It is not
here.
Close.
Yeah.
We really appreciate it.
I left about 5:15 this morning, but it's okay. The sun's shining.
We're glad you're here. And Charlie, I want to start with you. The decline in newspapers is not new. It's been going on since around the year 2000. But just remind us, Charlie, how this began. What contributed to this slide?
Well, I think an awful lot of what came into play was social media. I mean, you really have the development also of the internet. I mean, this started in the 90s. And suddenly, veteran journalists had a competition out there that they had to figure out how to work with. And technology was changing so rapidly at that point. I mean, digital photography and offset printing and all of these things coming down. So we're juggling all these plates, and along comes the internet. What does this mean? You know, so that's been what we really had to address.
Advertising, Mark, is a big part of this, right? People started migrating, advertising started migrating
sure.
online, and that was a huge source of profit for newspapers.
Sure. And one thing just to add on to what Charlie said is that, you know, like, why do people care about newspapers? You know, we're not here lamenting zip drives and 8-track, but with newspapers, that's where all the journalists work. So in 15 years, or just before the crash, like, there were twice as many journalists. Like, there are 60,000, now there are about 30,000. So in the course of 12 or 15 years, with newspapers, they've lost half their circulation, they've lost half their revenue, and they've lost half their employees. And it's the scale that people may not appreciate, where like a TV station like MUR or even here, you may have a staff of 5 or 10 or 15, but the union leader had a staff of 200.
Wow.
Or in Boston with a local TV station, they may have a staff of 20, but the Boston Globe had 300 journalists. So that's a lot of journalists who aren't out there reporting now.
Well, and Nancy sent us some numbers over the weekend from New Hampshire Employment Security. So that's the state's website that tracks, the department that tracks employment in New Hampshire. In 2001, 2,200 people in the Granite State worked at newspapers at 72 establishments around the state. In 2017, 919 people worked at 39 establishments around the state. So, Nancy, thank you for the numbers. They're pretty shocking. But to the point that Mark was starting to make, why does this matter? You know, as he said, we don't lament the loss of, you know, 8-track tape. So who cares if all these journalists have gone on to other jobs or are no longer working in journalism?
Right. Well, I've learned a lot studying at the Institute for Nonprofit News. And we do a lot of research on this very question. And one thing a lot of the research is finding now is that without a vibrant, competitive local press, you really have less interest in elections. And I truly believe democracy is threatened as a result of this shrinkage that just keeps happening.
Give us a couple examples of what you mean there.
Well, most of the studies show that people want to feel linked to their community. And their local paper is, or their online news outlet, their local radio station, that's where they're getting their information to make decisions about who to vote for locally. I'm sure I personally experience this when I go to the polls, not feeling as well informed as I might have been when most of the papers were covering the candidates much more in depth just for local offices.
Go ahead, Charlie, and then I'm going to bring Maggie in.
Yeah, I think, you know, what we have is a problem where we're now all becoming more polarized than ever without a local media. Everyone's now in their own echo chamber. All their friends on Facebook say the same thing. All, you know, what they're reading online, blogs say the same thing. So a local newspaper serves more as a community bulletin board for all thought. If it's you know, a fair
even thought
press,
you disagree with.
Right. I mean, that's what an editorial page is for. But I think we have a real fear of becoming more and more polarized. We see this going all the way up to Washington. And a lot of that has to do that your local newspaper doesn't exist anymore to give you other, force you to see other ideas and thoughts. So where does this go? I don't know.
Maggie, what do you think? Why does it matter that this industry has declined so much?
Well, I mean, I think beyond, you know, informing readers about elections, which is very important, something that Nancy started to touch on was, you know, I think that newspapers knit communities together. So, you know, without sort of a central hub for, you know, different ideas or to learn about what's going on in your local democracy, you know, there's also a sense of sort of finding out what your neighbors are doing, taking these disparate towns in one newspaper's coverage area and bringing them all together and, you know, making a region. And that's something that I don't think that Facebook can really do in the same way that newspapers can do.
So, Maggie, to you, does it matter if people are reading the Valley News in physical paper form or online? Or are you happy no matter what?
I'm pretty much happy no matter what. I think that there are benefits to reading in print, and there are you know, things that we can do online that we obviously physically cannot do in the print edition, which would include things like breaking news, which would include things like video and other forms of storytelling. But I think that something, you know, that the print edition can deliver that our website doesn't do in the same way is to slow people down and to give a hierarchy of the day's news in a nice sort of digestible, slow format so that you are sort of seeing those different ideas, so that you are being exposed to different areas of your region. Whereas with a website, I think that it's easier and it's tempting to go, you know, one story at a time, you know, find the news that you know, is right in your backyard or for whatever reason you have a particular interest in, and you can sort of miss the bigger picture of your region. So trust me, I'm happy either way, but they serve different purposes, I
think.
It's
really interesting to hear you say that. What do you think, Mark? When you read a newspaper in physical paper format, you get the bigger picture.
I think so. I think people just spend more time reading print, but that doesn't really get more people to read print.
Sure, and you're not going to kick anybody out who's reading your product online.
The point I was going to make, and Maggie's aspirational because she's young and she's a great journalist, but the other piece of the puzzle about the demise of newspapers, and there are some very good ones around, there's some very good local newspapers, but the other piece of the demise or the decline of newspapers, the digital, of course, is the big one, but the other is corporate ownership. And we talked about this offline, about Nashua. Look at the papers who are doing well in New Hampshire. It's Charlie's, it's ours, it's the Concord Monitor, Valley News. And then the ones that aren't tend to be corporate owned. And that's a national issue. And within the North Country, there's a group out of Massachusetts that bought a bunch of weeklies 10, 15 years ago, including in North Conway, Littleton, Ossipee, Granite State, Granite News, and Wolfboro, and all those papers had local ownerships, and they were a vibrant part of the community, and they're all shells of what they used to be. They all had their own local reporters, their own editors, and through this sort of corporate consolidation, they just basically no longer exist.
And what's the impact to the community when those newspapers become shells, as you say, Mark?
I mean, it's a loss. What everybody's saying is that there's no voice. Newspapers are a mirror to the community, and they also have an influence of the community. And when that's gone, you know, that's part of the fabric of any community.
I have so many questions for all of you about, again, why it matters, and we're starting to get into that. But I also want to remind our listeners to join us. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Today in the exchange, we're looking at the future of local newspapers here in the Granite State. Readership is way down nationally, but we're going to hear about new models and some success stories too today on our show. We're talking with four New Hampshire publishers and journalists about how they're adapting and thriving in a new environment for newspapers. We're also going to look at some new research that shows why it matters when local papers do thrive. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Do you read a local paper, either in paper, physical form, or online? Tell us why or tell us why not. Again, you can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org, or call 1-800-892-6477. So all of you, Nancy, you first, please. Looking at some of the research that people at Harvard and University of North Carolina and so forth have been doing, it seems that there is a pretty big loss in municipal accountability when the local paper goes away. There's some research that shows that municipal budgets go up when the local newspaper dies, that there's less competition in mayoral races when the local newspaper dies. I wonder what you have seen or what you've observed in your long career.
What I've noticed in the last few years very dramatically is the sense of elected and appointed officials that they don't necessarily have to be accountable. I'm not saying that they're out doing untoward things, but nobody likes to have a lot of oversight. Nobody likes people looking over their shoulders. But it's much easier today when there's fewer reporters calling up and less powerful news organizations. I mean, I think there was a time when elected officials really were concerned about having a big negative editorial in the state's largest daily paper. And when the readership was very high and that was what people were doing. And I think the paper is still, of course, very powerful, but nothing like it was years ago. And I notice that just in accountability, in starting out with a new news outlet, InDepthNH.org, there were a number of elected and appointed officials who would just assume we went away. Why don't we just use the press releases, you know?
Reprint the press releases that we send you.
Rewrite the press releases. And I think we need to turn that around. And you know, that's part of our mission, is to hold government accountable. We also give voice to marginalized people, places, and ideas. But the big thing is to make sure people know what their government is doing and show, you know,
make
stay
them uncomfortable.
At it.
Watch
yes.
those budgets. Watch those votes on the zoning board.
Yes,
watch who's running for election.
And that's not across the board. But I do see that as you know, a trend, a gaining trend, probably the last 5, 6, 7 years.
Charlie, go ahead.
Well, you know, Mark and I were very similar in a way that we both own our newspapers. And there is, he talked about corporations. Corporations not only have changed the news business, but they've also changed the advertising business. When you had a lot of mom-and-pop restaurants and hardware stores in a community, those people bought full-page ads in our papers. Now you have McDonald's. You go to McDonald's, you say, would you like to buy an ad? They said, no, our national advertising takes care of it all. People see it on television. They know there's a McDonald's. You're out of an ad. So, I mean, as you see more and more of these national chains come into our communities and the smaller businesses close, those are our stock and trade for advertising. So that's partly what's made it very difficult for independently owned newspapers.
And we're not going to talk all doom and gloom the hour for sure, because all four of you have some innovative ideas, some sparks about making it work. But a question for all of you before we go to our listeners, and maybe Maggie, you first. So, you know, we can say, oh, corporations buying up newspapers, corporations grabbing all the advertising, people going online, looking at Facebook because it's more comfy cozy there than reading the newspaper. But what about the readers, Maggie? Doesn't it all start with them? If we're going to be upset about the slide in local newspapers, shouldn't we be, you know, waving our fists at local readers? Or are you guys not offering them a product that they want anymore? I want to hear from everybody. I'm going to start with you, Maggie.
Yeah, so I mean, I think one of the things that we can do a better job, or speaking for myself, that I can do a better job at and that I'd like to do, is to be communicating with readers more directly, to be making these cases about, you know, why what we do is important. I think because of all of the forces that we've been talking about so far are, you know, pressing down on us and pressing down on readers, it's no longer the case that it was, you know, in past decades that everybody, you know, grows up understanding the role of local news or the role of a newspaper and, you know, what it brings to a community. And so I think some of that has been lost. And I think that, you know, we can make the case more directly to people who, you know, like my generation grew up in the age of Facebook. Why don't I just get my news on Facebook? Can say, well, here are the reasons why, and here's what, you know, we think we can bring to the table that, you know, these other places cannot.
What do you think, Mark? How much is this industry's struggle its own doing? The argument you'd make in any business that if you're not giving customers what they want, they go away.
It's both. I mean, it's all that. And part of the, yeah, I mean, we have to keep in mind that people bought newspapers for generations, not for the news. I mean, they would read the classifieds or the comics or all those things. And it kind of amazes us. I mean, as much energy as we put into news in our, and we have a strong print product, but we also have a very vibrant web presence. But typically, I mean, almost always, unless it's a sensational story, the top pages that get the most traffic are the obituaries and even classifieds for us. So I think we have to remind ourselves what newspapers were. So there's nothing wrong with the journalism. It's really wrong with the business model. And this goes back to Charlie's point. National advertising has left newspapers to local advertisers, and there are just fewer local advertisers around.
What do you think, Nancy? Are newspapers sliding because they're just not giving people what they want?
Well, I think it's impossible to give people what they want when you can't afford to hire more reporters, when you have to lay off reporters, when there are so few people in the field. News gathering is a very labor-intensive process, and it's costly to pay people. So inevitably, when you have to cut costs and there's fewer reporters, there's less news. And I agree there's other reasons people read the newspapers. And when you have Craigslist for job hunting and things that the classified ads used to do, it's really stretching. I think our duty is to really get out there, get ahead of this, and inform people. We need you. Whenever I do a fundraiser, I always say, please donate generously, but buy a subscription to your local newspaper. Send a letter to the editor. I think there's a lot that citizens can do to help us. We really do need some help right now.
All right. Well, and you've got a different business model, Nancy, that we'll talk about in a moment. And we'll start taking questions and comments from our listeners. Again, Exchange listeners, tell us about your newspaper reading habits, whether you read a newspaper at all, whether you do it in paper form or online. And we will be back in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Frank from Concord turned his Mazda into Morning Edition.
For this is NHPR News. I'm Rick Amley.
Erica from Bristol turned her Toyota into Conversations with Terry.
This is Fresh Air. My guest, Emily Bazelon. She says, quote...
And Chris from Amherst turned his Ford into folk tunes.
A good Sunday evening to you, and welcome to the Folk Show here at New Hampshire Public Radio.
Before you trade in your vehicle, consider the value it'll bring supporting your favorite programs on NHPR. Learn more at nhpr.org/cardonation.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, the health of local newspapers in the Granite State and why our guests say it matters. What do you think? Do you read a local paper? Tell us why or why not. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Mark Garang is here. He's publisher of the Conway Daily Sun, the Laconia Daily Sun, and the Berlin Daily Sun. Charlie Jordan, editor of the Colebrook Chronicle. Nancy West, publisher of InDepthNH.org. And Maggie Cassidy, editor of the Valley News. And all of you, let's go right to our listeners. And Dan's calling from Sandwich. Hi, Dan. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, how are you? I'm calling just one of the things that I really was moved by recently in the Laconia Sun was a multi-part series by, I believe, your managing editor who had some mental health issues and self-committed. And I just thought this is really what local journalism is about. It's a national issue, but it really brought it home, a local person being honest about their issues, destigmatizing, you know, neighbor to neighbor. This is what a local paper needs to do is let us know what our neighbors are doing and what kind of help they need. It was brilliant and honest, and I just loved it. And you could only see that locally.
All right, Dan, thank you so much. Go ahead, Mark. That was your work.
Yeah, I was in Laconia, and it's our editor who wrote a personal story about his own mental health issues, and it was very, very compelling.
Okay. Thank you for the call and for the shout-out to one of the papers that we have represented here today. Noreen's calling from Stratham. Hi, Noreen. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure.
I just want to comment that one of the things that I think is a big loss in the decline of newspapers is of the obituaries. When my mother, we lost my mother 3 years ago, and when my mother, you know, when she got the newspaper, that was the first thing she looked at. And amongst her friends, too, the first thing they look at when they get the newspaper is the obituaries. And when my mother died, I considered her to be a very well-known woman, and there really were not very many people at her wake or funeral, because I think people just don't know unless you have this huge network of Facebook or you call everyone, you know. But there are people that you just can't reach. So that was very sad, and it was very noticeable that it had to do with the newspaper to me.
Noreen, that's a really interesting story. Charlie, what do you think?
Well, we still publish obituaries. We get them on a regular basis, and I know some larger media charges for it, but we run it as a news item. I mean, in a way that we view it as news, it's community news. It's very true. If you don't have that mirror, I mean, I feel like what a local paper is it's holding a mirror up to the community and saying, this is you. And when you lose that mirror, you lose track of what's going on, you know? So I think also, you know, you can find out, I think the information age is still exploding by what we see, you know, with the internet. But you can find out what's happening today in Los Angeles or Chicago or Paris. But what about that fire across the street? What's that all about? That's where we step in. So that's important.
What do you think, Maggie?
So, I mean, one of the things that I've noticed that is similar to the loss of obituaries in some areas, perhaps, is our birth submissions are also way down. And I don't think that that's because fewer people are having babies. I think it's because there's this generational thing where people are not submitting birth announcements to the paper as regularly as they used to. So, you know, it used to be births, engagements, marriages, and obituaries. I think we still have a lot of people who do submit obits, but those other three categories, just not as much. And that is something that's lost when people can't find that in the paper.
Well, thank you again for the call, Noreen. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Rick is calling in from Sandwich. Hi, Rick. You're on the air. Go ahead. Welcome.
Hi. I just wanted to recall a little bit of history here that Charlie Jordan was intimately involved with, and this was the day in 1997 when four people were shot and killed in Colebrook, and two of them died at the office of the News and Sentinel in Colebrook. And in the aftermath of those shootings, the survivors gathered together, and Charlie Jordan was there as a volunteer as well. And they put out an issue of the newspaper the next day reporting on that incident. And it did just a great job in terms of accuracy and balance, and was eventually nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. But the importance of it for the community was that they didn't have to wait for the Union Leader or the Globe or the New York Times to offer their own explanation about what happened. The fact that the community itself was able to report on this story, to explain it in some ways, you know, demonstrated that Colebrook, you know, just had a heck of a bad day, but it was still a functioning and self-reliant community. It was just really important psychologically, I think, for the performance of that paper.
Rick, I'm so glad you called. And Charlie, this is really hard for you to talk about, obviously,
right,
since you lost friends and colleagues
that day.
That
was probably, in 40 years of writing, one of the most difficult days I endured. But
most difficult, I'm sure.
The situation was, you know, it's funny because we often have a love-hate relationship with our friends in law enforcement. You know what I mean? It's like we're usually trying to get information all the time from law enforcement.
And they won't give it to
you.
And
they often won't. But I say, remember this. When everyone else is running that way, law enforcement, rescue workers, and the media are running this way.
Towards
we're running
the
with
problem.
You.
Towards
we're running the toward the problem. And a good journalist doesn't avoid a problem. We've got to answer questions for the public. So that particular day, by just a quirk, I was there, and I worked with John Harrigan. We finished that paper that night, and I was very proud of that entire staff.
Yeah, well, my stomach is just dropping remembering that day, which I remember it very well. Rick, it's very kind of you to call in with that. Going to email, Jennifer emails from Belmont, who says, I agree that social media has changed readership. So many people often comment on an article without reading it, sharing opinions based entirely only on headline and supporting subhead. As a freelance writer for many national outlets, this is a shame. So much interviewing, reporting, and research seems to go unnoticed on social media because people seem to want a quick read. Jennifer says, what do your guests think about this and the challenges shortened attention spans pose for both digital and print outlets? Not only, Jennifer says, what it means for journalists, but also what this means for how society is collectively gathering information and making decisions. Jennifer, great question. Maybe you first, Nancy West, short attention spans and what that means for local journalism.
Well, I know we rely a lot on social media because we don't have a print product.
Sure, you're only online.
So we utilize Twitter. I send everything out on Twitter. We rely on Facebook. We probably get 40% of our new readers on Facebook. It's sort of a necessary evil right now. I would like to see it different because Facebook has an algorithm that will often bump us out. We only get to about 6% of our readers, but it's something. It's a way to connect. We need to give them the opportunity. I'd rather see people reading a headline or a Twitter than not having the information at all.
Than nothing at all.
And when they feel the need to have more information about that particular topic, they will read it. Perhaps it's a story that doesn't demand a lot of in-depth reading. I know Pew Research has done some, you know, really good studies that show even if you do a long-form piece online, if that's a topic that people are interested in and it's well done, they will follow through and read a long piece.
Maggie, what do you think as the current editor of the Valley News but the former web editor?
Yes, I mean, I agree with Nancy that I view Facebook as a necessary evil. It does drive a lot of people to our website, and I think puts our name out there in front of readers who, you know, I was referring to before, might not have grown up with the Valley News, might not be from this area, might not have grown up with a newspaper in general. But, you know, the other thing besides a short attention span is that people don't want to pay for things that are posted on Facebook. Facebook. And so, you know, to the extent that I'm posting there, there's also this thought in my mind that, you know, what is the end game for this article when we put it on Facebook if people are only reading the headline and they don't want to pay to click in and read the actual article? So, you know, it's a constant balance. We have more Facebook followers than we have print subscribers, and that to me seems like a problem. It's just figuring out how to get people to take the leap and not take ourselves out of the conversation entirely by not, you know, participating in this platform where, you know, everybody is.
So that's interesting, Maggie. So you have more Facebook followers of the Valley
Correct.
News than you do print subscribers. So a question for you first, Maggie, but everybody jump in, please. How do you monetize that, Maggie?
that is a great question.
You have to pay your reporters and turn on the electricity and the heat and the lights and so forth.
Right. Well, I mean, going back to people not wanting to pay for it, that's where we're at right now, is making the case to people on really a one-on-one basis when we post something on Facebook and, you know, folks say, I don't want you to post something on Facebook if it's behind a paywall. You know, I reach out to them directly and try to make the case for, you know, it seems that you're finding value in what we're doing. If you're hitting our paywall, that means you've already read, you know, several articles this month. And if you are finding value and you want to, you know, keep reading, then, you know, I hope that you'll support it. So for me right now, it's sort of trying to reach out to people directly in order to get them to make that leap into supporting us financially for this work that they seem to want to be able to access.
Mark, how do you make it work? You run three papers. How do you make it financially viable in this era of extreme financial difficulty for newspapers?
Well, I mean, it's a way of how we do it on the print side, but on the social media side, there's an expression in newspapers that going from print to digital is trading dollars for dimes. In other words, the
really?
Money you get
wow.
in print was a dollar, and the money you get online is a dime. And, you know, and Facebook isn't going away. It's a great medium. I mean, it's a great advertising medium even. So it's just one of those, it's just a challenge. And when, you know, and most people get their news from, they say most people get their news from Facebook, but, you know, most of those stories originate from newspapers.
But people who read them on Facebook aren't paying for them versus the person
yep.
who might pick up your newspaper at the grocery store who, well, I guess your paper is free, actually,
it
right?
is.
Yeah. So tell us more about that. How do you make it work when you offer it for free?
Well, it's advertising. So, you
and
know,
you're still able to find those local advertisers?
Sure. And, you know, so part of that's our whole model. And we're free daily, not a free weekly, so we're free daily. And when we started in 1989, we actually were, without any really forethought, we were kind of like internet ready because we're free and we're local. So we've been local back in the day, like 15 to 20 years ago, you'd see national stories on the front page of the Union Leader and all the regular papers. So we've never done national. I think the only story we've done nationally with a national story that dominated the front page was 9/11. So that's one thing. So we don't have that barrier to entry. I mean, paid newspapers, you know, like it or not, every newspaper in the country has a slow decline of paid print. And obviously, that's another discussion of how they're getting out of that. But that's just a fact. So we don't have that barrier.
That's really interesting. So you were internet ready. You were already free.
Yeah, we didn't even know it existed at the time. But that's what I can say in hindsight. Sure.
And it raises an interesting question. You know, if people can get, as Charlie said, I think earlier, you can find out what's happening in New York or Paris. But what about that?
Right.
Building going in down the street. But you were hyperlocal before people were talking about hyperlocal, Mark.
We were.
Yeah. Go ahead, Charlie. Love to hear
well,
your thoughts.
I think the thing, I mean, we are in a unique situation. I understand the problems for the New York Times and the Valley News and the Boston Globe. How much do you give away until you're cutting into yourself? You know, with a free paper, in our case, we view half of our readers are online. The other half read a tangible paper. So
wow.
We're about 50-50 split right now. To our advertisers, that's a bonus. We don't sell that, but they know it's there. What we've tried to do is really embrace Facebook in the best way possible, which is difficult, but it's a great rumor source. It's, hey, how come 12 state police just went by my house? I see that on Facebook. But when push comes to shove, they turn to our Facebook page for an answer because they know we're journalists and we can get access to information they can't get. So all of a sudden, boom, we're getting all these hits on our Facebook page and people are sharing our news breaking story. So it is kind of almost like a wire service potential thing for newspapers. Again, we have to look at these things. I remember thinking, I think I told you earlier, Laura, I was in a publishing house back in the early 80s when they went into desktop publishing, and I was an editor, and I was ballistic. I said, you're turning editors into typesetters. What's going on here? Then I realized I didn't have to sit on the floor anymore and block manuscripts and stories with paper and scissors. It was all on the computer. Wow. So, you know, I was
wrong. Change.
And the same thing with Facebook and all the other media. We got to figure out how to work with it because it's not going away.
Instead of saying, oh boy, they're stealing all our advertisers, they're stealing all our eyeballs that used to be uniquely with us. You know, you raised a really important point, Charlie, that I wanted to ask everybody about. I'll turn to you first, Nancy, and that's the trust issue. Now, Charlie talked about people see rumors on Facebook, they hear the sirens going by their house, but they trust the Colbert Chronicle to give them the real story and what's going on. But as you know, Nancy, we're in an era of lack of trust of media nationally and locally. So how do you regain that trust to say to readers, yeah, you can trust us. Please come here and read. Please come back if they've gone away from local media.
Well, we have to earn that trust. And we have to work even harder today with all of the negative things that people will talk about as far as fake news, this, that, and the other. So I think we have to be very careful in how we organize and how we operate and earn that trust. The public deserves that. And if we are careful in our reporting, and I believe in the future of news, so I love all the new platforms. I love using video. I love experimenting to see what happens. But we can't lose sight of the very basics. We have to name our sources, for instance. I don't believe, except in certain situations that are someone might be in danger or whatnot, that we name our sources, that we try to be truthful in every single way and transparent with our readers. We don't have a paywall, so we have a different financial model. That
you're a nonprofit.
We're a nonprofit, so we raise our money probably similar to public radio, grants, underwriter, major donors, and so we believe in giving our stories away, except for some stories we are now charging for because we are in a situation where we think that will bring us value. People have a right to know that we're being honest with them. For instance, when I put up a news release, I put up on the byline, it says by news release. So people know that this information came from a government entity, whether it's the police department, whether it's the attorney general's office, the Department of Health and Human Services. We try to be very transparent in that way. And there's way more I'm sure we could be doing. I love talking about this topic. We probably should do a Facebook Live seminar every Monday and say, this is why we think you should trust us. And I will often hear from people that say, oh, you're so left wing. You know, you publish those Mike Marland cartoons. And Mike is a terrific editorial cartoonist that I'm thrilled he's working for us. But we also publish and encourage publishing from the GOP leadership at the State House, opinion pieces. We have to really work at making sure we can show that balance and that we hire people that only work in the, you know, the strictest old-fashioned way of doing things. You know, we can't lose that in all of this new future of news.
Well, Maggie, I want to ask you about that as well after a break. We got an email from Stephen in Dover who says, although I miss the local newspaper, I also remember why I no longer subscribe. Stephen says, for one, I would often go frustrated with the bias in reporting. And Stephen says, why do newspapers feel the need to endorse candidates? So I'll throw that one to you, Maggie, after a short break. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. The This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, the topic is education funding, and we'll be live at 7 p.m. with an audience in our Concord studios. So join us live tomorrow night on The Exchange at 7 o'clock. We return to our conversation now about local newspapers in the Granite State. Tell us your news habits. Do you always read your local paper, sometimes or never? Does your town or region even have local news coverage? Let us know. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. And all of you, right back to our listeners. And just before the break, Maggie, I read you an email from Stephen in Dover who says he used to read the local newspaper, but he got frustrated with bias. He doesn't like the fact that newspapers endorse local candidates. What do you think about the trust issue, Maggie?
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's important to separate out the, you know, make sure that people understand the difference between the news side and the editorial pages, which again, going back to people not necessarily growing up with papers or being familiar with papers in the same way, is something that we can do a better job explaining to people and being really transparent about. So, you know, with the news side, you know, we do get complaints from time to time about bias in our coverage, but you know, it's just not something, you know, we work really hard to be unbiased in our news reporting, and the opinion pages where we, you know, sometimes endorse candidates is, you know, a different group of people and a whole different situation. We try to only endorse candidates when we have something to say or when we feel like there's a candidate worth endorsing. So, you know, it's not just because there's a race happening, we don't feel the need to endorse, you know, in all situations.
Do you want to jump in, Mark?
Sure. I mean, I think it's too bad that, and it's true that people have a view that newspapers are biased, and I think there's sort of a good reason for that because it shows up in their editorial pages. And most newspapers have a liberal bias. They just do. And so that's kind of too bad because the news, and people don't understand that's different than how they cover the news. I mean, we endorse all candidates, local and even national candidates, and we purposely, particularly on the local level, if we're endorsing seven state reps, like three of them will be Republicans and four will be Democrats. And I think that's important to maintain some independence.
So you would say that most editorial pages in the country,
yes,
or in the state anyway,
yeah, for the Union
are
leader,
liberal, but the coverage is
balanced. And that's a whole discussion of how about the liberal bias, you know, and I think reporters get a bad rap for that. And I think if there's a choice, it's sort of like you guys that here in NHPR. I mean, what creates the reporting is always honest and good and balanced. It's really the choice of stories that organizations do.
What about getting rid of that editorial page if that editorial writing does sort of taint the whole product? Why not just get rid of it?
I think it's, you know, as a community newspaper, it's an important role because we do have a leadership position. I think people look to our editorials. We have a little bit of a joke in our newsroom that, you know, we put a hex on anybody we endorse tend to lose, but it's an important role that we fulfill.
Well, I really appreciate the email, Stephen. What do you think, Charlie?
Well, we don't endorse, and I love it that people think I'm a raving conservative and a raving liberal. I've heard this from people. They don't know what we are. And I just like a good argument, but just to remember back to your caller, how newspapers often started. In Lancaster, New Hampshire, back in the mid-19th century, there were two newspapers.
Wow.
The Coos County Democrat and the Coos County Republican. What's that tell you? You
know, that this issue of bias has been around for a long time.
They came a lot out of political organizations. And over the years, I mean, the Union Leader, where does the Union, a Democratic, you know, a hierarchy here? Well, that's a whole different blend together. So names are names, but we try very, very hard to just give everybody a fair shake. But no, please do not take away the editorial page. I love it.
Really?
I love the letters that come in. I love the opportunity to see people slug it out in words. As long as no one's hurt and no one's slandered, it's a great opportunity for America.
And I'm not suggesting getting rid of all those letters to the editor, which I also enjoy reading.
Right.
But if those newspaper written, sponsored, endorsed editorials, Charlie, taint the unbiased work that the journalists are struggling mightily to produce, why not just get rid of it?
The only thing I'm worried about when I see, and we do run letters when people write letters in, you know, please vote for, but I'll sometimes see what I think are like ghostwritten letters from different candidates where the letters start to look very similar. And then I see on a website, send this letter to your local newspaper. Some papers do not run those letters. I have to go through those with a fine-tooth comb to try to figure out if it's really from the heart or just somebody mirroring something somebody sent to them. You know,
as they say, what's really grassroots and what's astroturf?
Right, exactly.
Here's an email from Sandy and Keene in Rochester. At the last local election, only one of 12 seats was challenged. My feeling, Sandy says, is that there is not enough news that comes out before the fact. Mostly coverage of the vote, even though we are covered by the Seacoast. Often notices of hearings are posted, but hard to find. Sandy, thank you. Rebecca in Merrimack says, I was dismayed to discover that our New Hampshire ski resorts are being bought by opioid corporations like the Sackler family, which owns Crotchet Mountain, Attitash, and Wildcat. And the legislature had no clue this was going on. Rebecca says, this is absolutely a symptom of fewer journalists and less local news being discussed at the state level. Here's a shout out to you, Mark. Ginny in Laconia says, I think the Laconia Daily Sun offers me the best of both worlds. I'm on the mailing list, so I get a notice every day with the lead stories and a link to read them online, or a link to read the paper online page by page. My preference is to actually read the paper online page by page. Often I want to see the ads for local stores. If I'm in a doctor's office, though, there's almost always a copy of the latest hard copy to read while I wait. Of course, Ginny says it's free, but I do have to congratulate them on their distribution and focus on local news. There's also a large letter to the editor section. Thank you for all those emails. And to Ginny's point, what do you think, Mark? I'll give you a chance to kind of toot your horn. In fact, I'll give everybody that chance.
Sure.
What do you guys do well?
Well, I mean, you have to separate the business model from the journalism.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, the paid papers, like Maggie said, her paper has a circulation of 12,000. So in Conway, we print 17,000 papers a day. And in Laconia, it's 18,000 papers a day. So when you add up all our free papers every day, like we're the largest circulation paper in the state, if you do look at it that way. So, you know, that's a big hurdle that we don't have to face. But the other side of it, that allows us to have a full editorial staff because we're important in the community. People advertise with us. Everybody reads the paper. And as a result, you know, we put out a good product. And in the world of self-promotion, like the New Hampshire Press Association contest just talked about the three finalists for the general excellence category, which is the top category, and it's the Union Leader, the Concord Modern, and the Conway Daily Sun. So that's not bad for a free paper, a podunk paper in Conway.
I wouldn't describe it as podunk, but if you want to use that word, that's fine. How about you, Maggie? What would you say you do well at the Valley News, still even in this challenging environment?
Yeah, I mean, I think that at our core, we're storytellers, and I think that what we do that Facebook and these other places can't do is still report things that just aren't on the surface, you know, aren't just off of press releases, are things that, frankly, you can't get anywhere else. So, you know, whether that's there was a story circulating around a couple weeks ago about the closing of Hanover's only Chinese food restaurant. And it was a very sort of surface level story that was going around in other places, and then Jim Kenyon dug in and put together a much more nuanced, detailed accounting of what led to that business closing. You know, recently we've been reporting on a large-scale embezzlement case in the Upper Valley, and again, you know, those are public documents, but they're not things that you know, the general public at large is going to know how to pull and how to get and how to understand what's going on there. So, you know, I think what we still can bring to the table and what we do a really good job at is, you know, things that you can't get anywhere else.
How much do you think people value that these days, Maggie?
Well, I think that they value it quite a bit. Again, I don't mean to sound like a broken record. It's just whether or not they want to pay for what they value.
Well,
I mean, going back to that discussion about our paywall and advertising and all of that. The stories where I hear the most complaints about our paywall are those stories where folks can't get them anywhere else, because there's a level of frustration that, well, I can't just turn over to, my friend's, group on Facebook, or I can't just hear it down the street. The only place to get it is at this link. And so, folks will say, I don't want to pay. Why don't you, put ads on the site? And that goes back to, dimes and dollars in terms of advertising revenue, not to mention that the, forces affecting us in the digital age are the same ones that are taking out a lot of mom and pop shops who, were our advertising base. So I do think that people value what we're doing. It's just trying to help people along to make the leap to pay for what they value. And again, I don't want to put it all on the readers. When Nancy was talking about grants and things like that, we're in the same boat in terms of trying to find different ways to fund what we do, because we do want people to be able to read it. But it's just an ongoing challenge.
So how do you make the funding work, Nancy? You touched on this before, grants, nonprofit support, but there's some things you have to watch out there too, because if you get too much money from one company or foundation, people might say, oh, that's kind of slanting what she's doing. So,
oh, jeepers, we haven't had that problem.
Yeah.
which we
You're not getting giant grants from anybody?
No. Funders are just like advertisers. They have no role in story planning, story ideas, any more than someone on the outside. There's a firewall there. We're a new organization, so we haven't made it work. I'll be very honest. We haven't made the finances work yet.
How new are you, Nancy?
This is our fourth year.
Okay.
And we are still finding our way. We really need to hire a director of development, someone that really, I have gained so much respect for that job. It's very important, and it's a real skill set. And for advertising and underwriting, our first 4 years, we've really been trying to prove we are value. So that will be our way of getting the funding. We do have some funding. We've been very lucky. The Neil and Louise Tillotson Fund through the New Hampshire Charitable Association has really helped keep us afloat. We have one advertiser, but it's an excellent advertiser, Northeast Delta Dental, and there will be more to come, because this is the kind of website people want to be associated with. Perhaps we don't have a million clicks a day, but I can't even tell you how fast we are growing since we started our expanded Statehouse coverage. It is really just growing crazy. And we pick niche stories. We try not to compete with the local news outlets.
You're not covering everything in the community.
No,
that these
but what
guys
we
are
cover, we have the best reporters. We have Gary Reyna, we have Paula Tracy, myself. And yes, maybe we have to blow our horn once in a while, because these are the most talented journalists that we could find. And now we're doing Statehouse coverage that I think is really knocking it out of the park.
Longtime seasoned reporters who worked at state
papers. And they have the
history.
They can, a bill that comes up this year, they remember the history of the whole nine yards and the money behind it, who was winning, losing. And having those people on board is a real asset. But it's the future is creative, too. We have some real creative ideas we're going to be using for the primary coverage. Because we have lack of funding or short funding, we have to be more creative. So I think stay tuned. We already started with decoding the vibe. We have one of our columnists who writes about the personalities of the candidates.
Okay.
I was just going to say that Nancy represents, she's talking about all the online, but she helps us. I mean, we reprint her story. She does great Statehouse coverage for issues that affect the North Country. We pay her for her, so for those stories. And so Nancy represents a new model that hopefully will work. And I encourage people to donate, because it's not only helping her, it's helping local newspapers who use her stories.
Let's take one more call if we could. This is John in Ringe. Go ahead, John. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, I wanted to say that you prompted me to try to resubscribe to my local newspaper, just listening to your show. Unfortunately, one of the problems I've had I mean, I have kind of a love-hate relationship with them anyway. But I do think it's important to support a local paper. Alas, once again, when I've tried to subscribe online, their system that they contract with keeps saying, oh, we have an old password, old email, all that. And I've tried repeatedly to subscribe and to call into their office, and they don't answer their phone. So I just think it's a problem that spirals down. The smaller the papers become, the less they can really even man their phones, let alone bring in new and good reporting.
Oh, John, thank you so much.
But
yeah.
I'll keep at it.
Thank you so much for the call. And Charlie, you know, as we talk about newspapers shrinking, John's telling us about the importance of just keeping that customer service up.
Well, I think it is important. I think the key thing is, you know, we were talking about the what's important in a newspaper. What I feel, again, is that opportunity for the community to participate in your paper. They don't want to look at it like it's a small, closed club. How do I, you know, we had this issue, for example, up north with the ATVs on public streets. Huge issue. Boy, I mean, it brought people out like I hadn't seen in years at town meeting. And our letters, and I know the News and Sentinel, the other paper in Colebrook, we both were running like letters all over the place and almost pushed the obits out of the paper. And so that tells you that there's an engaged public out there. They know that they want to be in that high-profile forum because what they're saying is the most important thing the world needs to know about, and you are the conduit for it. So as long as you play that role, newspapers are going to be fine.
As long as you play that role as a
trusted
arbiter.
Trusted conduit
A trusted
the
space,
yep.
Not mm-hmm. just, you know, a space where everybody's going to agree with me or where
right.
everybody's going
exactly.
to disagree with me. We had a lot more we could have talked about. Lots of questions and comments from our listeners that we did not get to. So I want to thank everybody for jumping in on this topic. And all of you, thank you very much for being here. Maggie Cassidy, good to talk to you. Thank you so much and good luck with your new job.
Thank you very much.
That's Maggie Cassidy, editor of the Valley News. Nancy West, great to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Nancy West, publisher of InDepthNH.org. That's a nonprofit watchdog news website. Charlie Jordan, thank you again for being here.
It's good
really
to
appreciate
see you again,
it.
Laura.
Charlie Jordan, editor of the Colebrook Chronicle. And Mark Orang, good to meet you. Thank you very much for being
Thanks,
here.
Laura.
Mark Orang, he's involved with three papers, the Conway Daily Sun, the Laconia Daily Sun, and the Berlin Daily Sun. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt, Christina Phillips, and Ali Oshinsky. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Knoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.